true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
This dog wants cheese.
Oh, yeah. You're almost at lunchtime there in NYC.
NYC?
Well, I just think of Florida as NYC because that's the time zone. I'm confused about everything.
It's okay.
You can hear my Barry White morning voice.
I have Barry White morning voice today and it's 11. I woke up today at 10 o'clock.
Nice.
Well, it would be except that I couldn't fall asleep until 2.
Oh, that's still 8 hours.
No, I'm happy about the amount of time. I'm just like weirded out by this whole, lately I'm staying up real late thing. I think it's basically I'm just eating too late at night. But anyway, yeah. So I'm torn about whether I should tell you, I want to tell you the story of Bhakti and I, but I'm like, I should wait till he's here because I want to kind of hear his version.
Sure, we can save it.
We can start here. I'm getting ready to come to your fair state.
Okay.
Did I tell you I'm going to be in California the entire month of April?
Nope.
I didn't tell you that. What is wrong with me?
I don't know. What is wrong with you? That's a question for the ages.
Yeah, I'll be there the whole month. Ready to hang out?
Sure. Yeah.
Yay.
I'll be here the whole month.
Okay. I'm staying in Danville. I'm doing a show up in Grass Valley. And, Some Silicon Valley shit and just fucking hanging out, seeing peeps, dude. But guess how I'm getting there?
Train.
That would be smarter.
You're driving.
Mm-hmm.
Because you still can't fly.
Right.
Haven't quite healed that rift in your soul yet.
No.
That sounded really dismissive, and I did not intend it to sound dismissive the way I said it.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
I want you to know that that was not sarcasm. It was searching for words.
I try to now just let anytime you're, do you sound dismissive? I just let it roll off. I just go like, I'm sure he didn't mean it that way.
I rarely do.
You know, it's a good point about trains. But the problem is then you spend all this money renting a car.
Right. And trains are not cheap.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. And also I had a hard time with the long distance overnight train I took once from some part of Michigan to Denver. So I think it was 2 nights. I can't remember. It was so hard to sleep because the tracks were so shitty that the train was going left and right, up and down, left and right, up and down. So you'd get jostled awake every 20 seconds. So you can never really sleep. And it wasn't like scary for me, like a plane, but I was wide awake all night long. So I was like, this is terrible. So, but I think from what I've been told, that particular set of track, like it's infamous for being shittily laid. So maybe other tracks would be better.
Name of your autobiography. Famous for being shittily laid.
Yeah.
No, not true at all.
Nah.
Nah.
Yeah. So there you have it. California. I'll be there the whole month.
You gonna sing the song?
California.
Oh, I was thinking California, here I come, right back where we started from. That's all I know.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It's not a great song, but it's a song.
I've never heard of that song.
Oh, I feel like my family always sang it whenever we'd visit California, which was often.
From New Mexico, which is the state I'll be driving through. I cannot wait to get to New Mexico. Can't wait. I love the energy there so freaking much. It's a little hard on me altitude-wise, but we'll deal with it. We'll hydrate like a motherfucker. Yeah. I'm going to go to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You just go straight across. You just turn left from Jacksonville. You go forever and you're in California. But in the meantime, you hit Baton Rouge, Albuquerque, Flagstaff, Northern Cali.
Nice. So you're taking that northern route, basically. It'll come up over...
Southern route.
You'll go...
It's the most southern way you can go.
Southern route would be Vegas to LA.
Oh, you mean once I'm in California?
No, once you're... Well, if you're going through Albuquerque, you end up then you end up going through northern Nevada and above and like through Tahoe and into California that way.
No, there's another way, the southern way. You go straight left through Flagstaff into Tehachapi, and then you take the 5 up.
You're right, and you go below Vegas, near Vegas, and you take the 5 up.
Yeah.
Right, but that doesn't take you through Albuquerque or Santa Fe, does it? Oh, I guess it does. Never mind. I'm an idiot. Tell me I'm an idiot.
No, I don't do that to people. And I don't think that way.
No. I had it all mixed up. Well, that was scintillating conversation. Now let's talk about the weather.
You are so, you have a harsh critic voice about things we talk about.
I'm morning grump too. I'm a little, yeah.
But that's the thing I notice. You regularly are worried that what we're talking about isn't interesting.
And I'm sometimes right.
I don't think so. I don't know. Anyway, so I think that's an interesting topic because a full by yourself cross-country road trip as a lady by yourself.
That is interesting. I agree.
Yeah, I'm kind of actually for the first time in my life a little nervous about it. Like every night a different hotel, except for when I stay with my family in Albuquerque. And like, I'm going to have to get up early as fuck because I don't want to be driving at night. And like, that's a different rhythm for me. And something happens to the car, you're by yourself. And then like, weather is a thing, as we know from my...
You have an odd relationship with weird shit happening to your car. And I don't want to call that into existence. I want to name that it has happened in the past.
Let's reframe it. I have had in the past scary experiences with lightning and rain on the road and winter.
And then some weird thing happening to your wheels. That one.
That's
time.
What I mean.
Yeah.
The lightning and the rain and the wheels and the winter. Yeah.
That's one of the nuttier stories I've ever heard about travel. And so my heart feels for you is all I'm saying. I'm like, you will be fine. You will be good. You will surround yourself with light and you will drive and it will be great. Are you driving the same vehicle?
No.
You have since replaced that vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Also, astrologically, there was all kinds of shit going on for those trips. So I keep looking into like, is there a better day to leave? You know, I'm asking a lot of questions before this one. Because I'm trying to make it just, let's have it be smooth.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited because on the way back from Cali to Florida, I want to go through Austin, Tejas, because I've never been there. And it's a city on my list.
Neither have I. I've heard good things about it. Do you know people there?
Yes, just 2 or 3, but yeah. We talked about, trying to think what else is going on. Talked about the Atlanta agent, right?
Yep.
Talked about... I could tell a whole very profound story that's happened recently. What's the shortest way to do this? I feel like we're giving Desmond a great editing job on this one today. I'll just say it this way. I had some mom, I think I shared about this on here, right? Some mom processing recently that came up.
Because your mom was finding you and trying to get in touch with you and you were dealing with that.
No, after that, there was mom processing that just came up because I had a reading with a psychic she's in New York. We did a reading on Zoom.
Uh-huh.
And she said, you know, I asked 1,000 questions and she works with cards and she said all kinds of interesting stuff. And she said, every single thing you're asking about comes to fruition more easily once you've processed this next thing about your mom. And I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, I think I remember you did mention a little bit about that just because like a little resentment about, come on, I've done this work.
Yeah. Yeah. We all feel that way. The next layer of mom stuff you hit.
Absolutely.
So cut to, I do the work and it happens, of course, because I'm me like big and intense and fast and quickly. It felt like a metal date pit, like the pit of a date.
Uh-huh.
You know, a date nut is like dense.
Yeah.
At the center of my heart. That was dissolved in a therapy session where I was doing energy work and my therapist was holding space and I was just naming it while it was happening. And I thought, no big deal, just another piece of mom stuff gone. Great, right? Well, ever since then, I was sharing this with Rami the other day. I feel so much more connected to the divine feminine in my heart. Like I feel like something was removed that has like fundamentally changed what my priorities are. But overnight. So I'm like, wow, I don't want to do this, this, or that anymore. I don't think I care about this, this, or that anymore. Like, I'm not sure I'm ready to say out loud what those things are here, but like big things that are fundamental to what I've been doing. I'm just like, nope. And at the same time, nothing has replaced it either. There's nothing that's come in that's like, now it's this. So there's this real sense of openness and fluidity inside the heart, and a lot of like desire to connect with people. And it's very Libra energy. It's very like my North Node is in Libra. So it's like anchoring me in this North Node energy. North Node being about what your whole life direction is heading you towards. And so its second half of life for me was always going to be about Libra. So I'm all about like beauty and community and arts and connecting and love and like this family of beauty and love and arts and like very feminine energies. And I was sharing with Rami, like, I don't know how this Katie Rubin post that healing, I don't know how she chooses things. I don't know how she, I don't know what she likes. I don't know what she's good at. I don't know what she does. So I'm walking around feeling very like, well, bring it, universe, because I got no sense of where the rudder is for this lady's life.
Huh.
That's a pretty profound shift.
That's a change. And does that feel like, well, I'm thinking about things like human design, which are a little determinant in the sense of like, well, wait, if it's changed, has it changed? Or have you just recognized something that was always sort of should have been there? Or I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially priority shifts, that's a huge thing.
Well, every human is on a journey in a lifetime, right?
Right.
And everybody changes over the course of their life. Are they supposed to grow and change?
No, I'm the same. I am the same. I have never been.
So these changes were inevitable. This is the growth of my life. It was always going to happen. It's just the way I experience change is so dramatic and in the moment because I'm aware of all of it and it happens in big chunks all at once.
Right.
So it's really just taking me to the next whatever. It's all, I think it was all built in and it was all pretty, it was going to happen. It just happened. So now I'm just watching. I'm really into the human design idea of decision watching as opposed to decision making. Because I'm like, well, I have even less control now. I feel like the remaining ideas or delusions I had that I'm driving this bus were living inside that date nut. Something about the anger at my mom built a need for me to control something. And there was this nugget of anger at her. Not even about anything particular. It was just an energy that was sitting there. And then it's not there now. So I'm like, oh, all the things I've been doing to control my reality were in just like that anger was making those choices. So if who we are, this is how I look at it, is not our defenses, right? That anger inside me, all of it that I've ever had for her that I've been working through my whole life has been in reaction to her, right?
Yeah.
So that's not who I am, capital I. That's not the truth of who my soul is, a reaction to a lady. No, my soul is this other eternal light being or whatever the fuck it is, like this silent wind in my heart of receptive, divine, feminine, whatever. And this personality ego mind called Katie Rubin has no idea who that, like, it's like, oh, I feel more and more and more like this wind thing. What does this thing do? And so I just keep watching what it ends up doing.
Yeah.
Because anything I would choose from the thing I call I, the personality, it's just reacting to Valerie Rubin. So I don't have any desire to do that. I don't have any energy on that. So I'm like, well, I'm not reacting to her now. So I don't know who the fuck I am. I've just been through this so many times that it scares me a little. So I was leaving messages for Rami being like, well, I hope this works out because fuck if I know what to do now.
Now I'm completely unmoored. I have no.
But it's happened so many times that what I want to say for the listening audience who goes through versions of this themselves, I go through these big things because I think I'm meant to teach about this kind of shit. But the point is, anytime you become unmoored, there's no anchor in an egoic identity. You don't have to panic because back to what you said, and I was going to bring it here anyway, and you got me there faster, was I still have strategy and authority. And a strategy and authority is just like, for me, it's respond. Life is happening. Respond to it and follow the emotional wave. And so I'm already doing that shit. It's just that the notion of who is doing it has completely changed overnight.
And where you're responding from probably too.
Correct.
From what place you respond? Is your response reaction or is your response
more of an integrated response? So I'm excited about it because I'm like, this me is going to be responding more cleanly, you could say, as opposed to in an unconscious way, reacting to something the rest of me isn't on board with anyway. And I'm 46, just turned 46 in February. And as we know, all of us listening, we all know this, the sixth line life at age 50, the sixth line comes off the roof and re-enters the world. So I still have 4 years before I'm supposed to like show up in any kind of big way anyway, which I won't have to make happen.
I got 4 years to fuck around. That's fine.
Well, it's more like I think of it as 4 years to just like keep whatever's happening now is fine because
you're going to keep exploring it and learning from it and getting more pieces out of it.
Exactly. I'll be healing and integrating until the universe sees fit to have me do something else.
I have a question. It's all right. And it's about human design. And it might be relevant to what you were just saying. And that has to do with when you overlay two human designs and you get a whole new looking system, right? We've been playing with that a lot in this house, you know.
Mm.
You've infected this house quite well.
Oh,
quite
wonderfully. I love that.
We get into human design. We get into all the things. Anyway, housemate Carolina, dear friend, she's been doing the overlays and looking at them. And she was describing looking at one of them where neither of us have like a center defined, but when we're overlaid, that center becomes defined. And I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah.
And neither did she.
Okay.
And I would love for you just to talk about how that operates. What does that then do? And in what way is it defined? Only when we are in relationship or what?
So which center are we talking about?
Oh, shit.
G center?
I feel like it might have been the G center.
If you can pull it up, it'd be good to know because then I could speak more usefully to you.
Yeah, I don't have the overlay, unfortunately. I can only look at my own.
Okay, so basically this is where we talk about the magic of interrelational conditioning. In other words, interrelational, when I say that I'm just talking about two people interacting, condition each other's fields. And that's what we call the transpersonal element of human design. So in other words, let's take, for example, somebody who has split definition, right? You have single definition, right?
Yes.
And so does Rami, which is interesting that you two were ever together.
Right.
Because you're both fully contained within yourselves. Probably you were mirroring each other's wholeness to teach each other that. Anyway, people with split definition like myself, okay, I literally, there are things I can't make happen. I can't do them. I can't push them into existence without somebody coming to bridge my split.
That's so dirty.
So dirty.
It's so dirty.
So I'll give you an example. Are you okay? What are you doing right now?
Yeah, I'm listening. I'm bringing up my human design.
Oh, okay. Because your eyes are, this is you. This is what I'm seeing.
I know. I'm totally listening. I'm with you.
Okay. I just know you're not maybe the best multitasker.
I'm not typing anything right now.
Okay, I'll just wait till you're ready. It's okay. I'm not mad about waiting.
Yeah, I can't think. So it's fine. Go ahead. I was trying to think of where my human design was and I couldn't. So I stopped and I was just frozen there listening.
That's all right. Okay, so if I have two islands of definition, centers that are connected to each other, and then a separate set of centers that are connected to each other, but those two chunks aren't connected to each other. That's called split definition. So let's say I have gate something, but I don't have this other gate. And if I just had that other gate, the two chunks of centers would be connected and I would have single definition. You show up in my field with that second gate. All of a sudden, I can do some shit I literally couldn't do without you there. There's one I have, for example, called the channel of cycles, I think. And I can't start a new cycle of creativity in my own life unless somebody shows up in my field with that gate.
Okay.
And I regularly feel this because there's a certain melancholy that sets in with that particular channel when you can't activate the next cycle of your life until somebody shows up and activates it. So there's a kind of melancholy that is the frequency of that. And I'm now familiar with it, which helps me go, oh, that's what this is. I'm not depressed. I'm not sad. I'm just like a little bit waiting for the next cycle to begin and I can't start it.
I need a collaborator or a person to help ignite that.
They'll just show up in my field and it just happens. Okay, so back to your question. In a similar way, if you have open G and Carolina has open G, but the combination of your gates and channels, the way they interact, you might have two gates. She has one, you have the other, that form a channel that connects two defined centers and thereby activates a center, or you could say defines a center that you have open right now. So what that means is when the two of you are together, as a twosome, you guys have consistency and reliability in the collective G center between you. So where, when you're alone, you're free to be no one or anyone because you don't have strong loves and strong hates and strong passions and strong, I know who I am. Also, when you're alone, you might have a feeling consistently of I'm lost with no direction. And the not self of the open G will say, I got to find my direction. I got to get unlost. I got to know who I am. When you two are together, both of you will feel more like, oh, I know who I am.
Got it.
Because there's a defined sense of self that gets, that comes into being betwixt you that literally doesn't exist when you're not standing near each other. So,
and that's the other thing. It's not just about the those combinations of humans. It actually has to do with proximity.
Yes.
Yeah, because I was thinking about like with you and your mom, that you're not creating overlays with each other because she's, you're not in proximity to her. It's not just about your relationship with her and her, her design and your design, because you're not in, because you aren't literally next to each other to create those stories.
Oh, I, you mean like she's not triggering me because she's not in my aura?
Right. You guys, we aren't looking, we couldn't like put your two designs over each other and learn things about your gates and channels because it's not being.
Yeah, we could.
But would it, but it's not being.
From my childhood.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
It'd be super useful. In fact, I've done it a bunch where you go like, oh my God, all those times I hated her for X, she was compromising me in this gate right here.
Got it.
Yeah. Super useful. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's, well, when you get into stuff like that, now you're talking about trauma and unprocessed grief and pain, which in human design, they call conditioning. And then you have to decondition around that. So the question becomes, how do you decondition? And then as an energy healer, my answer is do your work. And then it deconditions you, right? But if she and I were to interact, if her aura were to come physically near mine, all those gates and channels would activate. The mechanics would be the same. I'd probably have a different reaction to it now. But still, it would be a shitty dynamic because our mechanics are not good together. Like I've looked at it closely. My mom has also a difficult, I've looked at her design. It's been very helpful for me, compassion wise, because I've come to understand her design a bit better. And I'm like, this woman was going to have a difficult life no matter what. And that, that gives me a lot of empathy for her. Like she has some shit in her chart that was like, this will always activate that in people. This is aggressive and people hate it. You're a woman, but also this, good luck, like rough stuff. So anyway, so did that answer the question at all?
Totally did. That's what I was wondering, because I didn't know that you could actually fill in a whole, you know, I knew about like completing gates and channels and we talked about competing ones or ones that are complementary or ones that are coexistent or pull each other or in conflict. But then that a whole center could actually get filled in.
I'll give you one tiny example just because for the listener, I think this might be interesting for them. And Bhakti is like, I'm chilling, don't rush. Amy, my human design teacher, who I've taken 1,000 classes with and who I work with privately for my own learning, her partner, like romantic partner, they run
together. Together, they
have a human design business. And the way their gates and channels operate, they have, I won't get into the weeds with it, but they have a channel that is called the channel of like birthing or bringing life onto the planet. And then there's a second one that's something like organization and getting stuff done. But neither of those channels exist when they're not hanging out. So when they come together, they literally have the energy to birth a business and organize it and bring it into being. But when they're physically apart, neither of them have any energy to do any of it.
It's like one goes on a business trip and the other's like, I can't get anything done.
Pretty much. And so they're like, it's magically perfect. The hard part is the romantic part, right? Like, because any romantic relationship is hard. But like, they're like, well, we're perfect for this business. And it's right there in the design. And then you take their charts apart and they both are just like, I'm just sitting here. I got nothing. Isn't that amazing?
That is fascinating. And I guess as human design people, that helps them to plan their own, if you're going on a trip, I'm probably not going to get anything done on the business.
1,000,000%.
And we know this and we're not going to judge ourselves for it.
1,000,000%. That's the whole thing. That's the whole point of, oh my God, what happened to your hair?
Well,
what's up, brother?
That's short, first of all.
Did it actually just get short? And did it just pull into the scalp? It retracted?
No, it got cut short by someone else on purpose, and I had to sit there and let it happen. And yeah, but that's another story.
Wait a minute.
It was for a part. It was for a shoot.
Is it blonde?
I have the lighting all. See, now that I have some experience, I have the lighting all set up so that there's a golden hue around me. It's honestly more my spirit and aura than my hair.
You have an aura camera? That is awesome. Your camera like just brings out your aura.
I have a special aura filter. Yeah, it's an aura filter.
Tell me the truth. You have a face filter on right now too, right?
I don't have a face filter on. What I do have is background blur on.
You look 20 years younger than the last time I saw you. What is different? Did you have work done?
So I did have. And it does involve my hair. Is this part going to be on the air, by the way?
Yep.
It doesn't have to be, but probably.
Are we on the record?
Everything's on the record, unless you tell us differently.
Okay. No, I don't care because it's already on Instagram. No, yeah, what happened was there's a hair transplant clinic, and I can't believe already I'm like, you know, telling you my most secrets. This is awesome. I don't even know your name, man.
Oh, hey, I'm Cassidy. Let's introduce our guest while we dig out his innermost secrets, Katie.
So this is Richard Bhakti Klein. And Bhakti, before you came on, just for everybody to know, I told Cassidy, I'm so excited to tell you how we know each other and a little bit about our history, but I have to wait till you're here so we can do competing versions of the same story because it's delightful.
Oh yeah, that'll be fun.
That'll be good times. And then, but in short, Richard Bhakti Klein is an expat from America who lives in Mumbai, India, and is a working actor in Bollywood, who also is a musician and music teacher and has in his past taught children math.
Are these all true?
That is all true.
These are things we know about Bhakti. I'll get into how we know each other later. But that's, ladies and gentlemen, Bollywood actor, white guy in a brown land.
And these days, none of that is deniable. And these days, I also have to say Tollywood and all the other Hollywoods because...
What's that? What's Tollywood?
So there's Bollywood, you know, officially refers just to Bombay, now Mumbai, right? The films that are made here in Hindi that are, you know, the big budget, like official biggest movies in the country. But there's also regional cinema in every state, including the state that we're in. There's a local Marathi cinema that uses the local Marathi language instead of Hindi. And that's all over. And, you know, RRR at this point, which is the most famous movie I'm known for, is officially a Tollywood movie, having been shot in Telangana. So, yeah, in the state of Telangana and Andhra Pradesh. Yeah, so it's shot in the south in Hyderabad. God, I hope I'm getting this right.
Another old friend of mine, another guy who looks a lot like you, white guy, who lives in India and shoots a lot of movies, was also in RRR with you. Eddie Sonnenblick. Do you know Eddie?
Yeah, Edward is a good friend of mine.
Yeah. Edward used to be the camp cook at my summer camp that I worked at for years.
Yeah, I know a little bit about his story that brought him to India, and it's not wholly dissimilar from my own. So Edward is a wonderful guy who also came here and made his dreams come true and is just like living his best life.
Yeah, it's really cool to watch.
Okay, now, great. That's Bhakti. What happened to your face?
So nothing happened to my face. I guess I lost a little weight and am trying to somewhat stay in shape. I saw myself on the screen and it really does add like 15 pounds. And I'm like, this shit is forever. Like, I gotta deal with it. And so I'm trying to do what I can. And I had a little bit of work done, which was offered me to as a paid thing for the clinic. To get international medical tourism. So, right, medical tourism, people go to India and Mexico and whatever for procedures. So this is actually a...
Hair.
Yeah, a hair transplant clinic in Rishikesh, in Dehradun. In Dehradun? Yeah.
But you didn't, nothing, you didn't have a up here or under the eyes or this guy, nothing?
No. Just I had some hair put in where there wasn't hair before.
I have no judgments of this. I think this is fantastic. You look amazing.
Your hair looks great too.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I was a little like, it's a long recovery period. And there were times
really?
I'm like, what the hell did I do to myself?
What happens during the recovery? Is it painful?
They're supposed to shave your head. I didn't let them do it completely, but they shave your head both where they're drawing the follicles from. So yeah, at this point, what they do is they dig in and grab clumps of two or three follicles at a time and put it somewhere else in the head and do that thousands of times, literally. And then it doesn't know where it is. So it just does its thing where it is. And you have so much that, you know, they take it out randomly. So you don't notice where it's taken from.
Did it hurt?
It, you know what, dude? So, I embrace, you know, I've always embraced altered states of consciousness.
No shit.
And any way to get there for me is an appropriate method, including certain chemical and biological agents, right? And pharmaceutical, you know, as well. So someone who does, you know, has a certain amount of anything in their system, apparently anesthetic does not necessarily work as well, or you have to use higher doses of anesthetic.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So at which when they found out that I do partake, they almost called out the whole thing. But then by then it was too late. So they said they would do it. But
wow.
Yeah. At one point, I fucking woke up during the procedure.
Stop talking. Stop it.
All right. And I could feel everything.
Stop it.
I'm still like high on whatever they're giving me. Because I insisted, by the way, on like total anesthesia. A lot of people do it with just topical. I'm like, dude, give me the most you have. Knock me out completely. Keep me asleep. Thank you. And it was, yeah, it's that great, thing where you count down from 100 and you get to 98. And like, it's so much fun for the short time that you can remember it. So I woke up in the middle of it and I'm high as a kite, but I can feel it. I'm like, doc, I can feel this. Can you do something for the pain? Hey, doc. Yo, yo. Hello. I'm right here. And the doctor who was the senior doctor at the clinic who used to work in Dubai and they brought in to kind of have a name, got all upset with me. He's like, hey, you're talking to a senior doctor. I may have cursed. I may have,
Give me a break. You should curse.
Sounded angry in some way, but I'm in pain. Yeah. So he's like, you're talking to a senior doctor. I'm like, hey, senior doctor, can you do something for the pain? God damn it. Or whatever, you know. And so eventually they did. But I totally remember that. And I was loud. I guess, you know, you can hear me through the walls. I don't care about any of that at the time. I'm just like,
no.
Put me out. I do not want to be conscious while you're poking in my skull.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. Then they finished it. Long story short, long period of recovery. Got to be careful with it.
How
rinse
long?
It with solution. Like for a week, you have to keep it wet and rinse it with sterile saline solution.
Ugh.
Takes 5 months, 6 months for it to really look decent again.
God damn it.
Yeah. But yeah, whatever.
Were you wearing like a ton of hats?
I was wearing hats for a while. I absolutely was.
Yeah, I bet. I have to say this out loud because it's so obvious to me right now. And I have thought this many times before, Cass, and I forgot to say this out loud to you. Bhakti is the Jewish you.
Okay.
Oh, how about that?
You guys are very similar in certain ways. And Cass is one of my best friends. And Bhakti and I are tight as fuck. We don't see each other or talk that much. But like, he's one of those people that it's just like, oh, hello, you again. Got it. You know, easy, whatever.
It is great to see you. I gotta say.
Hi.
Yeah.
All right. Now, it's very weird for me right now because I'm like, oh, my God, he really is the Jewish Cassidy. This is a fucking trip with blonde fucking plugs now.
I had that hair at one point in my life. It stopped being that curly.
Yeah.
At a certain point, it just gave up the curl. But
maybe you need to go to India and get your fucking hair.
I hear there's a good place.
The whole thing is really funny because this particular place is also pushing it as tourism for India. It's in Rishikesh, it's in the mountains. So what they did is they flew me to the mountains. And then we spent a day going to all of the amazing tourist places that really I never go to, like national parks. I went on my first ever safari in India in a national park in a Jeep. Like it was amazing.
true medical tourism, like actual tourism medical.
And they cheat me and I'm like, come see the Holy Ganga River while you restore your youth or whatever it is. So we did a whole day of that, which was really fun. And then, yeah, so they're trying to get international and tourism and sell both. I guess it seems like a cool marketing campaign. I don't know how they're doing with it.
I'm obsessed with everything you're saying, right? I don't know where to go.
I mean, do you want to name, do you want to give them their due and name the place? It's fine.
I don't even remember what it is. I'm going to have to look it up. It's but during the commercial break, I'll get answer.
I have 70 questions for you. I'm very excited. Number one, are you living in the same apartment where I visited you in India? Stop it.
I am not.
Oh, thank God. I'm like, you have to have moved by now.
I definitely moved. And, you know, I got to say my place is awesome. It's an illegal rooftop apartment. So like it's on the roof and then they build another apartment on top of it. And it used to be a hair salon. I could carry the thing around and give you a tour, whatever. So one whole wall is covered with mirrors. And like a bunch of little lights, which is great, which is where you get all the different colored lights from. And one whole side is a window. So between me and past the other buildings, I can see the sea. I have a cat and a catio.
Get out of here.
Yeah, that you can go out with a hammock out there. So yeah, that place was a box, a concrete box with no windows. And I was like, I got to get a place with windows. So yes. Yeah. I am.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Fucking A. All right. So usually where we start with people when we bring them on is and I'm going to ask you this eventually. I'm like, what does spirituality mean to you? Let's talk about it. And we're going to do that with you in a minute. And you have such a fun, unique, wackadoo perspective on everything that I just love it all. It's all gold. But before then, we have to tell our origin story, you and I.
Yeah, you start. And if I feel like you're, you know, gone astray or skip something, I'll jump on it.
All right. So there we are. Picture it. 1999. No, what? 2006. What do you think?
Around there.
Something like that. 2010, maybe?
No.
Okay.
Eight, nine.
That sounds like a thing.
In Oakland, California.
Oakland, California, I get a gig teaching acting to rich Jewish girls in a Hebrew day school, right?
Yeah. Katie was the drama specialist, Hebrew day school. I was the computer specialist.
Those were our titles?
Yeah, those were the official titles. And but the auditorium, the computer lab was right next to the big auditorium, which is where they would hold rehearsals. So she was always like in right outside my door in the next room, giant room, doing the rehearsals. Those kids don't know what hit them. You gave them an experience that they would never have gotten at that school. That it's just so awesome to like, they're so lucky that, you know, they had that. How long did you do it for?
Oh, one quarter or something. Teeny tiny chunk of time. Because here's why. Before there's even the Bhakti story, what happened was I was in recovery for like 900 addictions at the time. And like very like on it with the recovery world. And so the addiction I was looking at most closely at the time was sex and love addiction. And these girls, I don't know what happened, but somehow they got on the internet. They were like, how old were these kids? Eighth graders or younger?
Yeah, the school was K through eight. So, but your kids were like 9 or 10 through 13 or so.
They got on the internet, Cass, and they saw some website or something I had that was like,
you were doing one of your shows and they saw enough about what it was about to.
Right. There was a description of a part of one of the shows that was like, as we navigate the waters of sex and love addiction, we come to know ourselves intimately. So they came back and they were like, I was teaching about like, what's an active verb? And I was like, so who has a question? And they all raise their hands. And the girl I call on goes, so what's sex and love addiction? And I was like, what? Long story long.
Curious kids.
It got to the faculty quickly that I was talking on the internet about sex and love addiction, and I was never asked back to that institution.
Did you get to finish out the quarter at least?
Yes.
You didn't get fired?
they didn't fire me, but they literally never responded to another email. I'd be like, so cool, what time do we start next quarter? No response.
I can say you definitely had your supporters, like, you know, like there was certainly controversy and it was, you had your supporters. In fact, most of the teachers, if not all of the teachers, were your supporters. Maybe a couple of the really orthodox kindergartner teachers, maybe not. But most of the teachers, you know, were totally supported you and thought that it shouldn't matter. And it was an educational thing and it's all good. And they were, but there were a few of the parents, and you know, it's all political. So a handful of the parents with the most money have the most power.
Yeah.
So not enough. They refused. And you know, the principal, to his credit, I refused to like fire you in the middle of the whole thing.
I didn't know you had any of this intel.
There were. It was a small school and.
I did not know you. We've never talked about this.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. Yeah. So they were just like, no, we're not going to do anything, but we were not going to have her come back.
And it was because of the sex and love addiction thing?
In a way. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
What else was it about?
I mean, not necessarily the past, but the fact that you were currently doing a show about it, I think, was more.
Oh.
More the issue, so that people could go and find out more of these.
Lurid things about me. God, I love this story so much.
It was more that. It wasn't like punitive for the past or about you being in recovery or anything. It was, well, yeah, our parents can go, like a rabbi can go like see her, tell her whole story, you know, on the same night that they saw her with the kids or whatever.
And she's probably fucking all the kids.
No, nothing. Nothing like that. And like I said, a lot of people thought that it was like good for them to get a right. more well-rounded education than they sometimes do.
Oh, God, this is great. Okay, so anyway, he's there and this is my experience. He's like my saving grace in this job because everybody's so fucking uptight. And I come in and Bhakti's like playing the guitar in the computer center and like doing bits, doing jokes in the hallway. And I'm like, funny guy who does music. So we like start to banter and we hit it off right away. And we're both like, you, not boring, can tell the truth to you. Cool. And we become buds.
Yeah. I mean, I was a performer too. I was singing in a bunch of groups and I was even dancing at some point. And
no, you were doing a ton of stuff. We both were in the arts and just had this like day gig doing teaching things with kids. And then it turned out, so we had a little affair. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's well put. Sure.
We had some moments, let's say.
You shared space.
We shared space.
You created some gates and channels.
And then, crazier than that, though, so we share some space. My best friend at the time, who shall remain unnamed, female, human, woman, I start to talk to her about like this dude I'm sharing space with. And she's like, oh, Bhakti? Oh, yeah, we dated. And I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, we had some moments. We shared some space. So my best friend, who I don't know even knows him from Adam, has boned down with the dude I'm boning down with. And I didn't know it until I casually was like, so this guy, Bhakti. And she was like, oh, yeah, Bhakti. Yeah, he's pretty hot. And I was like, what is happening?
Bhakti, should we tell her? Should we tell her? We should probably tell her.
You know, we also have a past.
We've been boning.
Great.
Long distance. It's not easy. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a big place, but it's a small world or whatever. Like I vibe with you. I vibe with her. You guys vibe with each other. Like, you know, yeah.
It makes sense.
It does.
Anyway, cut. So we like kind of, we were sort of friends and we didn't pursue that too long. And then you moved away to India at some point in there. And then there's a lot more details, but like at a certain point, I took a trip to India as part of my.
This is in India. And I saw you. Here.
Well, but weirder than that, let me just set it up. I went to go take a 10-day class in Mumbai. And I'm like in the airplane going, and I haven't put it together because I'm spacey. That you're there and you text me or Facebook message me. You go, did I just see you post that you're going to Mumbai? I go, yeah, I'm in the plane right now. You were like, you remember that I live here, right? And I was like, holy fuck, I forgot. I land, I like adjust a little to Mumbai. My birthday comes. It's like 2 days into, I'm in fucking India, in the most acid trippy city you can ever imagine in the universe. I'm in love with it. It's my birthday. And Bhakti's like, hey, I'm free today. So we go on this like Katie Rubin's birthday celebratory restaurant tour of Mumbai. We like ate amazing chocolate cake and like went to your place and went to the sea and went to a temple. And we had a fucking Mumbai amazing experience. And it was my birthday and he was there and it was too weird. And then within 24 hours of that, he got me an acting job. He like introduced me to a thing and I did an audition and they booked me and I played Hillary Clinton in some kind of something. So within 48 hours of landing in Mumbai, I had like a friend and some dates and some food and a tour and an acting job.
We like to be welcoming to our guests here.
All because of you.
Yeah, that was really a fun trip. I don't get a lot of visitors from overseas. It's okay. But when it does happen, it's a lot of fun. My sister came and visited me once and we had a good old time. But yeah, that was great. And it was, you know, it was my great fortune to be able to spend your birthday with you.
That was so magical. I just loved it so much. And there were a couple of times where, I don't know, you tell me how you remember this, but we both were like, maybe we're boning down again. But I feel like I always had a boyfriend. Every time I would see you, I was with someone.
Either you were or I were.
Right.
Like, we went back and forth like while.
You're right.
And yeah, that's in particular, you were seeing somebody.
Yeah.
And there was clearly some like really strong attraction going on here. But you wanted to like, you know, be true to what was going on.
By the way, side note, that guy's a dick.
Yeah.
Not worth the denial.
Nope.
I swear, I have since learned it is absolutely true that it is not worth the denial. It is like you absolutely, if you have an opportunity, you got to go for it. It is not worth anything talking yourself out of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I've since learned that lesson for sure.
I feel opposite of that.
But you know, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, I feel like I'm very glad I stayed true because I would have a feeling in the pit of my stomach. No matter whether he was a dick or not, I would feel bad about having, I would either have had to have lied to him or broken his heart. And either way, I would not feel good about it. So for me, it's the opposite.
I do understand that. I definitely understand that. And I do have a strong like tendency towards guilt that I've done a lot of work on. And, you know, I say, oh, look at that. There's my old pal. Feeling guilty about this for no reason showing up.
Yeah, but to me, I think there is a reason to feel guilty about that. Like we've made an agreement and the guilt is just an indication of like, hey, you're out of alignment and you're out of integrity right now. Guilt is not like inherently bad. Certain forms of guilt are useless, but certain forms of guilt are like a signal to like, hey, this doesn't sit right with you. Don't do that again. So in that case, I value that guilt.
Yeah, I do have to be able to, you know, tell that difference. That's a thing. Yeah. Last time I went home, I took an airplane. I booked my seat in advance. Before we take off, an old couple comes up to me, asks me to switch my seat to a middle seat so that they can sit together. And I was, you know, my decision was like, well, what would my mom want me to do? Like, what would be the right thing to do in her eyes? You know, they say the definition of Catholic guilt is that you're afraid that God will, like, you know, judge you harshly or look down upon you. And the definition of Jewish guilt is you're afraid your mom is going to, like. So I gave up the seat and it was fine. It was no big deal. But I got to Florida after the, you know, 24 hours of traveling. And I told my mom the story and she's like, are you kidding? I would have told you not to give up the seat. Like, you have absolutely said, don't give it up. Keep it yourself. And I'm like, okay, well, there's a lesson in there. Like, if I'm really doing it based on what my mom would want, then, you know, I have to take that part into account also. Like,
so your mom lives, remind me which part of Florida your mom lives in.
South Florida, Sunrise is the town. It's like near Fort Lauderdale, but then towards the Everglades.
So this is another thing that when Bhakti and I met each other, I'm from Miami and he's from this very close to Miami place. And we're both in fucking the Bay Area, and then we're both in Mumbai. You know what I mean? It's like a long journey together.
And I feel like even spiritually, we've had very different, but in a way parallel kind of journeys. Like we've both like decided at some point that we were gonna like figure out what makes us happy and what makes us most fulfilled and how we want to live and kind of create a way of living that works for us, because Lord knows all the ways that we've seen people do and does not work for us. So we had to figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Like free spirits who are like, no, I'm pursuing fulfillment, not like what people say you should do.
Yeah.
So that brings me to usually our first question. Like, so if I say the word spirituality to you, like, what does that word mean to you? How do you hold that in your consciousness?
I mean, to me, it means the aspect of life which is non-physical and, you know, experienced by each conscious being and which connects us all in some way or another. The Buddhist curtain of jewels or whatever, where each one is multifaceted and each one reflects every other one, kind of thing. It's that kind of, you know, unseen, unphysical connection, wholeness, sure, ultimate, but even between two things or two people or two beings, the under the surface connection between things.
Okay, cool. And how would you say, like what is the role, how does your relationship to like psychotropic, you know, trippy experiences, how does that world connect for you to your spiritual life? And or what is the purpose of the psychotropic, psychonaut kind of work, journey, fun stuff you're doing in your life? Like, how do you hold that? Like, what role does it play in your world? Because like, to be clear, you're into like, you experiment with a lot of things, right? Like the drugs, the pharmaceuticals, the plant medicines, the right?
Without incriminating myself much, yes. Yeah. All kinds of altered states of consciousness, as I said. Any, like for me, you know, I had a friend that wanted to do it naturally and he would meditate or whatever, but he wouldn't want to take anything. And for me, any modality is fine. I mean, even, you know, electromagnetic stimulation. I mean, all kinds of physical, religious, you know, historically religious methods. And yeah, like I said, physical, chemical, and biological substances.
But what are you looking for in...
So the thing is, normal adult waking consciousness,
yeah,
as is experienced in the Western world, is a very specific, very narrow state of being, which is really designed for like society to run well and for capitalism really to run well. And there, it's just one of, you know, it's so narrow. It's just one of so many. I mean, even that can be widened. And there's like so many other ways of experiencing
reality.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I always sort of wanted to see like what the limits of that, you know, were. And then how much the real trick is how much you can integrate into, you know, your day-to-day life. That's the thing. Anybody can go like meditate in a cave for 20 years and get somewhere, but can you bring it that back to other people?
Is the, right. Right.
So, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's one reason why I do that. And also the reason why I have meditated and have, you know, been in, you know, like black magic, Satanist, quote unquote, like working groups, and why I've used, you know, medical light and sound technology to induce states of consciousness, and why I like sensory deprivation tanks. And I mean, there's a lot of modalities, and a lot of them are a lot of fun.
So it's all about, so let me say back to you what I think I heard you say, for, and you tell me where I'm wrong. For you, these entering or experiencing these altered states is about A, the fun of it. It's fun for you to do that. B, it's about seeing past the veils of the three-dimensional reality we are conditioned to live in and attempting to bring some of what you see past the veils back into that 3D reality?
Yeah, it's in trying to, you know, make the most out of life. Some of it is an attempt to see what's possible. And then the next thing is to take the stuff that you want to integrate into your daily life, and how much of like the far out stuff can you actually keep within you? Yeah. And yes, fun. Absolutely. Fun is a huge factor. I'm a big fan of like, I choose fun in this lifetime, which is, I think, a Jerry Garcia quote. And yeah, absolutely. That's a big part of it.
What are some of the, like, one or two of the biggest takeaways from other dimensional experiences that you have wanted to integrate into your day-to-day life that you feel like, I try every day to like bring that thing back?
I guess the first example that comes to mind is, you could call it synesthesia, I guess, or you could just call it like deeply experiencing sensations. There's a level of listening to music where it's like just becomes you and it's inside of you and it's just complete, which music is probably the main way I do it. But even other, you know, maybe other forms of like, just really, if I'm experiencing touch, like for it to be the deepest, most fun, fullest touch experience. Being in the moment sort of comes to mind. With everybody overuses the term flow. It's a real thing. Like what's the guy? Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi? Is that the
that's a guy? Yeah.
But wrote the first book and did the actual, like, it is based on scientific research, based on, and then people have taken it to, they've generalized it in a lot of ways. But yeah, that kind of thing in a way. What was the question?
What experiences or ideas or energies from the outer realms do you try to live into and bring back?
So the way that you can experience music on under the influence or in a meditative state, really being able to connect with people like in a deep way, the way you would if it was like a couple's meditation kind of thing. Being able to do that as much as you can unilaterally, like offering that to the other person, seeing how far it's comfortable for them, not in a pushy in your face way. I met someone the other day that seemed so cool, and then we started hanging out, and she was just like, "So I want your full attention now. Okay, so no, don't look down. Okay, let's be together." And I'm like, "Dude, yeah, let's be together, like at the same table, reading different books." But so I don't know. Yeah, I'm going on a lot of tangents, and I hope you're enjoying them.
You're saying that your sense of being together,
a sense of widening what the present moment is. So there's a now, right? And like there's the past and there's the future, and it's a constantly moving like along the timeline. But how long is the duration of the actual now? And can you extend it a little bit into what you used to call the past, a little bit into what you used to call the future, make it sort of a wider, temporally wider window of experience?
Yeah, I get that.
To do that habitually is amazing.
Yeah, I do that a lot in my experience too. All the energy work that I'm always fucking doing, it has me able to, we call it in my training systems, stretching time, where you just go like, if you drop further into the now and further and let it expand, it doesn't really have to end.
See, and that's something I first discovered on acid at Grateful Dead shows. Mm-hmm. Where I was doing that temporarily with the music.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But to apply that to, you know, being with a person, or to apply that to like you're shooting a movie and it's happening right now. And what an amazing fucking experience. And like really enjoy it. Like of course, on one level, you're like working your ass off. Mm-hmm. But there's a level that there's the witness level where you're like, this is so fucking, like, how did you do, like, what the fuck, you know, and really, really enjoying it. Nevertheless, hold on to both sort of at the same time.
All right. Now I have another question that's going to maybe seem unrelated, but in my mind is quite deeply connected. What's your relationship to, and then I'll explain why I'm asking the question a little more after I ask it. So what's your relationship to trauma healing? And the reason I'm asking is something I've found over time is that extending the now, altered states of consciousness, knowing God, being in the oneness. These are all great things that are actually more fully integrated, amplified, and brought into the present moment through the trauma healing work we do, such that altered states become less required when the trauma gets lighter and lighter in the body because you become lighter and lighter, and then you become space, and space is the moment. So anyway, to me, there's a relationship between trauma healing and like all the things you're saying, but I'm wondering for you, is there a relationship, and what kind of that stuff do you do or have you done?
I mean, that might have been the first, you know, reason why I started looking inward in the first place, was to, you know, force to deal with some of that. I feel like, first of all, you know, the old lesson that, you know, life can change or end at any moment, so you should have fun and enjoy yourself, like that's always there. Not, I don't really need any more examples of that, but that certainly is a part of the trauma experience or whatever. My father was a Holocaust survivor. My father was in a concentration camp as a kid.
Wow.
Took so much with him, and I got so much from him. And of course, it's not, obviously not in any sort of blamey way, but yeah, there's a lot of that. And then there's other stuff too. Let's not even get into that. But yeah, I feel like it gives you, I feel like the trauma is always there. I feel like closure is the like stupidest, most non-existent word in the English language. There's no such thing. You learn to live with it, and you learn to have more options about how to respond to, you know, whatever triggers your, you know, those kind of traumatic, deep traumatic memories.
Hmm.
I don't think go away. Mm-hmm. I really don't. And I think there's a step of development where you make a lot of progress and you say that, I'm not triggered anymore. It's, you know, all that stuff I've dealt with, where it's really still like newly repressed. And
I agree with that.
Up there, you know, there's mm-hmm. a dangerous like point there.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever goes away, but you do certainly have more options, more, you know, more choices about how to deal with it. And you see it in greater perspective, and it almost makes you rededicate yourself to what you are doing.
What is healing to you? What does healing mean? What is that?
Healing to me is changing, you know, reactions to responses, to put it, you know, too tightly. It's being able to, being able to be free from automatically unthinking, emotionally, limbic system reacting to situations that are similar enough to the ones that traumatized you in the first place, that you go through the whole emotional response, and it's out of your control. It gives you, you know, like I said, even about guilt, like, oh, there's my old friend guilt rearing its ugly head again. Ha ha ha. I don't have to do anything about you that I don't want to do. I don't have to
engage.
Yeah. Not only don't I have to take it out on other people and lose my cool or whatever, but I don't have to let it devastate me as once it might have. I think that's as close to defining healing as I can get.
Love it. I'm really just interested in, you know, I know where I'm at. I know what I know.
Are you seeing some similarities and some differences? And
I am very clear and have always been very clear where you and I are similar and where you and I are different.
All right. Okay.
I'm very clear about what it is. It's just that, but the more I study human design, the more I'm like, well, now I need to see your chart, because I'm sure it's all in there. Like, I was going to be doing this. This was the path I was going to be doing. And you were going to be doing that. And that was the path you were going to be doing. And it's written. So I'm just sort of like, oh, cool. I'd love to see how that's written for you. The human design stuff like helps me. There's no longer, like, having seen what I've seen in all the different charts I've looked at, you can't, having looked at it, ever make anyone wrong, almost ever anymore. Because people's design is what it is. And they are what they are. And this sort of wounded, arrogant notion we can have that we're all going to be the same and we're all going to agree on everything all the time is really narcissistic, I think. Because what you want everybody to agree on is what you think. But you can't all agree on what you think because everybody's quite different. And like, period, the end. You can't. Like, you can sort of share on certain levels, but then there's always these little places where not, or And that's the science of differentiation. It just is. Now, in the realms of unity and oneness, you know, unity and oneness, everybody can experience it. We can all experience love. We can connect more deeply. But that comes and goes because we all have to like go do stuff. So you come into connection and out of connection, and that's fine.
I definitely don't want like, you know, everyone thinking the same way that I do or any one particular way. Like, you know, again, I'm in it for the fun, and it's a lot more fun if there's a ridiculously wide, you know, range of views. In fact, if everyone, you know, everyone is unique. And so if you can like figure out the uniqueness or not figure out, but experience whatever, like the uniqueness of each individual, like it's then there's no, you know, it's not, there's no comparison. There's no unity doesn't mean turning it into a big mush, yeah, you know, with no differentiation. I'm definitely like,
yeah,
clear about that. You know, Ken Wilber, I'm sure you know Ken, yeah, Wilber, right? So he talks about the pre-trans fallacy, which is there are sets of phenomenon that look similar,
right?
But one is pre-something and one is trans-something. So, you know, take a simple example of being verbal, like an infant is non-verbal, but that doesn't mean an infant has reached some high meditation state of satori where it's beyond words and all duality of words have been unified, mm-hmm, right? Like that's a possible thing, but right, that's not, so both of them are not speaking.
Right, right.
But for very different
reasons.
So it's that kind of thing. For me, you know, like unity is not de-differentiation. Like that's...
Let me ask Cassidy, I have a question that's provoked by what Bhakti's saying. So he keeps saying it's all about fun. It's I'm back to the fun. I'm here for fun. And then I'm thinking to myself, what one word do I say that for me it's all about? And immediately it's truth. And of course, you know, what does fun mean and what does truth mean? But we all have our orientations to reality. Like, do you have a single word?
For me, the word that comes to mind that I'm in pursuit of, not rarely achieving, but in pursuit of, is joy. So it's similar. It's closer maybe to fun than truth.
Sure.
But I feel like joy is the word that comes up for me when you ask that question.
That's cool. That makes sense knowing you a little bit.
And I would assume just like fun for me, that doesn't mean that bad things don't happen and that you have to ignore like the tragedies of life. It doesn't mean that. In fact, it means that because shit happens, then the joy or the fun that you experience when you are doing that is much more meaningful, I would say.
I'll admit to having, I have judgments that come up when someone says, I'm in it for the fun, which could be a very dismissive and very like, fuck the world. I'm just in it for my getting my rocks off. And I don't think that's what you're saying, but I like, so even, and I have my own judgment about saying I'm in it for joy, which feels very like, you know, oh, nothing, there's no pain, there's no struggle. No, that's what I want us all to have joy in order, so I have to engage on that level. Yeah.
Yeah, no. That's exactly right. And it can be seen in sort of that superficial way. And I really consciously make an effort for it not to be that. And, you know, to have a deeper understanding or definition of the word fun, which includes, you know, getting through the realities of life consciously and with people and not shying away from them, facing them head on. And then coming out the other side in some way and, you know, going through all of that, the richness of life, the highest highs and the lowest lows, and really being as present as possible to all of it is sort of my definition of fun.
Do you think you're a 7 on the Enneagram?
What's the 7 again? I'm not.
That's the adventurer. Everything is gamified. Everything is about, you know, finding it is the guy. I mean, you've just defined the 7 on the Enneagram by saying it's all about.
Did I?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're pretty deep Enneagram people. I mean, you could be something else, but
I haven't looked at my Enneagram in a long time, but I'll take your word for that. I mean,
it could also be 5, but you know, more 7.
There's an element of, isn't there one there's that's like performance and sort of like emotional.
That's the 3. That's what I am. It could be. I mean, it's rough to type someone else, but just by the superficial description, I would, that's like, that's textbook in a sense. And everybody wants to be a seven except for eights, but everybody else wishes they were a seven. So be happy about that.
I didn't know eights are the ones that don't want to be a seven, except I'm an eight and I don't want to be a seven.
That's the only reason I say that.
And how many are there? 11?
There's nine. It's an Enneah.
Oh, yeah, fine. So I'm just trying to think if 3 and 11, what did you say I was? 7. If 3.
There's no 11.
There's no 11.
There's no 11s. It's an Enneagram, which is
nine.
I'm trying to think if 3 and 7 are opposite each other and if there's something about like.
It doesn't really work. The opposite thing doesn't really happen. There's 3, 6, 9 are on one triangle together and then everything else travels to each other. Yeah, there's no relation really between a 7 and a 3. Yes, there are ones that you kind of grow to or shrink to, but the 3 and the 7 have no relationship in that way.
But what can I say? I'm a complex individual, you know.
You are.
You're the only one. You're the only one. The rest of us, super simple, put us right in those boxes. Very comfy there.
I don't know what your numbers are or whatever.
And you don't care.
He's not into the Enneagram.
I don't. I used to know what I mean. Listen, I'm not, but I totally respect whatever tool like anyone wants to use for self-awareness. Like, absolutely. And I'd be happy to see more about it and whatever in a you know, more appropriate moment. I'm not averse to it in any way.
Ah, good times. So when we have people on here, one thing we can do, there's many things we can do if you care to, and we also have no, I have no attachment to doing any of it, but just because it's a thing we sometimes do, we could open your Akashic records and answer any questions you have. I could pull cards for you from the records. I could open the records and bring energy healing through, or we can just keep chatting. Any preferences?
I mean, honestly, I don't think I really know what all those others actually entail.
It's basically just, I take you through a meditation and then I say a prayer and it connects me to you and to the all that is, so that then you would ask a question and I'd be theoretically listening to the all that is and responding to the question. It's just a prayer, breathing and a prayer.
Yeah. I mean, I love all of that except for the part where I ask a question.
Okay. How come?
I don't know. I don't know if I have any. I mean, I could come up with questions, but...
That doesn't feel like a yes. That's a hard pass. I think just for my own entertainment, how do you feel about this? I'd like to pull 3 cards for you, not on a question.
Yeah, I like the 3 card thing. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Which deck do you like? The one in my left hand or the one in my right hand?
The one in your right hand. Is that your right hand on the left side of my screen? Yes.
Yes.
Hold up your right hand. Yes, that one, please. Thank you.
No problem. So I'm going to do a little bit of a thing internally. I'm not going to bring you in on it because it doesn't feel relevant.
Where are you guys, by the way? Can I ask physically right now?
We are all over the place. I'm in Oakland, California, still the place of your origin story.
Oaktown, we love it.
Yep.
Tell them where I am while I do woo-woo shit.
Katie is in Jacksonville, Florida. She's returned home to the mothership.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Or at least a satellite of the mothership. That's after going to Mancos, Colorado for a year, then upstate New York for a year, which I can't remember the name of the town.
Beacon.
Beacon, New York for a year. And then finally, maybe settling, who knows, having been in Jacksonville for several months now.
What does settle mean?
There's no settle.
Jacksonville is a nice town. I almost, you know, being from Miami, it's like almost feels like Georgia more than Florida.
It is. It is very Georgian. Yep. It's the joke here is it's Southern Georgia.
It is amazing how we can communicate like this across the totally across the earth. Like,
it is amazing.
Although I often wonder if we spent as much time and energy and money on developing our psychic abilities in the last 300 years as we did our scientific abilities, then maybe we would be able to have this conversation without the technology.
Well, that's literally what I've been doing for the past 30 years. So I agree. Or I wonder. Hey, what's up, everybody? Rami here. What if wasting time doesn't exist? Wasting time. The concept of wasting time is a tool of white supremacy.
We judge how we use time, and we judge some of those uses as valuable and some as not. But it is cultural conditioning. And it doesn't take into account that we need rest time, and we need integration time, and we need healing time, and we need moments of space in order to see what comes out of them, what appears, what you run into. All like that is all crucial to us being fully realized human beings, healthy and happy and complicated humans. I'm asking again, what if wasting time just doesn't exist? It's not a thing. Rami's rules.
Okay. Well, first of all, this is your deck, the Akashic Tarot.
Nice.
So in the recent past, we have the One of Keys, the Architect, which we'll talk about. In the present moment, we have the Six of Roses, which is the War of the Roses. And the outcome, dun, 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 is the Lookout, which if you can see is a ship on fire with a guy at the top looking out. Okay. All right. Let's read about
the tracks.
Okay, cool. One of Keys. Architect. All right. In the recent past, somehow these energies may have been relevant. A man and a woman in rich Egyptian dress stand at a table filled with structural drawings and measuring utensils. He is the architect of all they survey, and he points to an unseen building in this expansive project. Throughout the scene, many workers toil on foundations, pylons, and palaces. At a mundane level, you could find yourself involved in a building project or renovating and redecorating your home or workplace. Most important, this card shows that it's time for you to step into a position of power in the recent past. In order to do that, you must recognize your talents and strengths, as well as your authority to take charge. An opportunity beckons that utilizes your skills perfectly. Feel the command you have over the great scope of this situation and take charge. Okay.
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is work. Do you want to, should I give you?
Sure.
Should I say anything?
Sure, yeah. Why not?
Or should I wait till the end? Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is work. Let's see if there's anything else that really...
Where have you taken charge at work or been asked to or encouraged to?
I mean, it's been a, you know, it's like acting is really a new, relatively a new art form for me when I started doing it here. And I was thrilled to be able to do it because I had sang for so long and didn't want to start over singing here, you know. So it was a way to like start with a new kind of performance. It was just, it came along at the right time. And then I've been really working on it, which is fine, but you can only really, you know what's going on when you're actually shooting.
Yeah.
But I feel like especially the last, I mean, I just had a big run since December where I did a bunch of stuff. So certainly that, but even the last 6 months or something, I feel like I'm getting better. Like I'm not a beginner anymore. Like I have some like skills now or something. And, you know, I obviously nowhere near where I would love to. I mean, it's a continual process or whatever, but I don't feel so lost anymore. So yeah, there's like, we did a smaller movie recently and I really got to participate in a lot of the direction and even some of the dialogue and, you know, play. I mean, it's a collaborative art form anyway, right? So, but I've been taking a little bit more of like the role of, I've been watching, you know, you work with like, either an up and coming Bollywood star or a senior actor, and they have this vibe and they know what they're doing. They ask for certain things. They, you know, discuss certain aspects of things. And I've been paying as much attention as I can to that. And I've been doing that a little bit lately and been telling myself it's time to do that. So there's been a couple of shoots recently where the architect, what you, everything you said sort of definitely rings kind of
okay, cool.
And maybe it's a good sign to keep moving in that way while of course always holding on to my humility and respect for everyone there and the knowledge that there's so much to learn.
Let's hear the rest of the reading.
Yes, please.
Q. Okay, so the present moment, here we are in the Six of Roses. This is a very interesting card, and I'm quite familiar with it, actually. Storm clouds gather in the sky. Two lines of mounted knights stand at the ready, facing each other across a clear field of battle. The left side carries the banner of the White Rose. The right carries the Red Rose. This card depicts a war within a relationship and or a battle within your heart about a relationship. Most often, this relationship is romantic in nature, but this card could also refer to a coworker, partner, boss, or family member. There could be power plays, and at the very least, there is a lack of reciprocity and communication. You are at an impasse. Your intuition or spirit, the White Rose, has told you that this experience is not a supportive one. But your passions, fears, and needs, the Red Rose, keep you from listening. You've tried to bring the two together, as indicated by the dirty flag with the combined White and Red Rose on the ground. But what's happening in this relationship is not compatible with your spirit's view for you. So there you stand, your spirit and your passions, just watching and waiting. This situation is nothing less than karmic, and it is time to listen and take action. Awareness, vision, and self-honoring are required now for you to position yourself best and make plans to leave the battlefield.
Interesting.
Let's wait before we respond to this one and hear the outcome.
Let's finish.
Well, I mean, in this case, I kind of feel like we should.
Yes, please.
So the outcome card we have after that whole shenanigans is this fucking chaos monster.
Yeah, right?
Look at this situation. The lookout. Okay. A man looks through binoculars from the crow's nest of a great masted ship. A battle is being waged on the deck below him. This card tells you to be on the lookout. There is a challenging situation, perhaps even a battle of sorts around you. You could experience a sudden fall or loss of your position. But if you are aware, you can make a backup plan that will help you ride through this difficult time a little more easily. This phase may be temporary, but it's important to keep your balance. Your strength will carry you through to a better time to come.
Huh.
It's interesting because two of these are about war, a war within or a war with another, the war between the spiritual part of yourself and the, you could say, human or secular or lower frequency part of yourself, or with another. I don't know, you'll have to tell us. Your attempt to integrate those parts, right, that hasn't been working yet. So you're being encouraged to just get off the field entirely with this battle. And then the outcome being, well, something might fall apart, but let's be ready for it and you'll be fine in the end. But something might be crumbling. Any of that read?
I mean, not really. I did just start seeing somebody like very recently.
Mm-hmm.
And so there may come a point when I have to kind of like figure out the dynamic between really liking to be by myself and if I want to be in a relationship, and that whole question. It hasn't really come up yet, but it might.
Is there, I think the way I'd frame it is, we can think about that relationship or anywhere in your life where there's a battle being waged, even just internally between one part of self and another, or it could be at work, it could be friends, it could be self, it could be romance.
I mean, there's nothing in particular. Like, it's always, you're always trying to get better. You're always trying to work on your shit. But it's not a battle. There's nothing that, like,
cool,
that I'm battling with that is, you know, threatening to catch fire right now. I mean, knock on wood, like, you never know what's around the corner in life.
Yeah, well, let's see what unfolds. Maybe we'll have you back in a week and you can be like, here's what happened.
Call us back when it all goes to shit.
Right? I guess so. Yeah, maybe.
But like, I want to say about that, like, cards like this look so terrifying. But like, I've had this card show up when it's just something is completing or something's done or you're wrapping up a thing. And you're like, oh, yeah, that did end. And I got pulled out of that maybe faster than I wanted.
I've had a string of like bad relationships where you could totally, what you just said completely applies to that, where I was like sort of hopeful and then they freaking went up in flames. Absolutely. And then I had to, that more applies to the recent past.
Well, let's see, because this is the future.
Yeah, well, I do keep making the same mistakes. I do keep choosing the same kind of people.
That'll do it.
Is it because they seem fun? I'm just, that's my judgment there.
It's not a judgment.
Not to put too fine a point on it. Yeah, you could say that. I mean, yeah, I'm attracted to people that are more volatile and, you know, surprising. And that's not always good.
What's your astrology, sun, moon, and rising?
I'm the last day of Cancer to the Crab on the Leo cusp.
Sun position?
Yes.
Do you know the moon and rising?
I do not.
Oh, that's a tease.
Sorry about
that. Do you know your birth time to the minute?
It's not to the minute. It's like 6:21 a.m. Something like that.
Pretty close.
That's to the minute.
I mostly made that up. It's like, plus or minus an hour.
Oh, that won't help. Okay. If you ever find that from your mom, let me know.
I feel like, you know, the traditional things of Cancer, the Crab, and Leo, like, I feel like I have, I am emotional. I do prefer staying at home, but I have enough Leo to get me on stage. Like, mm-hmm. There's definitely some of that going on.
So anyway, yeah, I could see you being a Leo rising and having all this Leo Cancer.
Yeah, it's an interesting combination, I feel, right? It's interesting. I'm definitely sensitive, but, you know, try to use that to my advantage.
Yeah. And the fire, there's a lot of fire.
So any other questions you want to ask me before we have to go?
Nope. Any questions you want to ask me before we have to go?
Do you guys have any questions for me before you go?
Have you been experiencing joy lately?
Some. Not as much as usual. I'm in a little bit of a lull, but thanks for asking.
All right. Well, this too shall pass. You're welcome.
It's not anti-joy. I wouldn't say that. I'm not in the anti-joy. I'm just in...
What's anti-joy?
Like suffering. I wouldn't say I'm suffering. I'm just not feeling the peaks of joy. I'm not feeling the rise. I'm in the smooth water.
It's like a musician having high standards where, like, you could always do it better, or any artist.
Yeah.
But you also have to appreciate, like, what you did, right? Like, at the same time wanting to get better, you also have to, like, appreciate, like, how far we've come and all of that, too.
Oh, yeah. I do that a lot of the time.
I can tell you're that kind of guy.
You should have met me before this podcast. Totally different person.
Really? Did this change you?
Katie, would you say this podcast has changed me?
Well, what were you going to say about that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no question, but I'm just, your experience of me, can you observe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, fundamentally, I think we're always just right where we always were. But I also think with some of your stuff, like we all have stuff, right? Patterns. You've like tackled, faced, and conquered several distinct, powerful patterns and completely changed them. So yeah.
Deconditioning. Shit, we could get into that, but we gotta go. Sorry, gotta wrap up.
That gives you so many choices. That's really huge. And that's, congratulations, that's awesome. All right, it was lovely chatting with you people.
Thanks, Bhakti, good to see you.
Bye, everybody. Bhakti, great to talk to you and meet you, the other me.
Yep.
Enjoy life.
Yep, thank you so much.
Do your work.
Go have fun.
Bye. Bye.
What are you asking for? All of the answers, say what? All of the answers, yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
I think we have a little delay. I think what we're saying, there's a delay, and then you respond on top of when we're talking because the delay.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
Please hold.